the scriptures themselves, how God presents the movement of his kingdom, and also just seeing the reality throughout the New Testament history and in the history of the nations and in the current history right now. Okay, for you guys who are in the back, if you're in the back having a conversation, could you please bring it to a close and come in, or take it out and up the steps. That's for you guys who are actually talking right now. Bring it to a close. Thank you. Or take it outside. One of the two. Okay. This is a member of our steering committee who's standing there ignoring me. Thank you, brother. All right. I just don't want you to distract other people in your conversations. All right. That's almost everybody. So how many of you want to see renewal and revival in the advance of the church and God do great things in this country? How many of you want to see that? Amen. Can I just challenge you to think this way, that whenever God does renewal and revival, he starts with the poor and the oppressed? It is never a top-down change. It's always bottom up. And that is the ministry of Jesus. It's the ministry of John the Baptist. It's actually the ministry of the people of Israel, a ministry which they rejected. If you want a good psalm that shows the nature of this cross-sacrificial love that God called his people to, go and read Psalm 44, where the people of Israel say, "We've not done anything wrong. You have been our only hope of salvation, and yet you have put us in a place where we are being utterly defeated by our enemies, and we don't know why." And the conclusion of the psalmist is, "For your sake, we face death all day long." And of course, you know, Paul picks that up in Romans chapter 8. And he says, this is the call of the church. For your sake, we will face death all day long, because this is the means of God's salvation. Last year, we were challenged, I think, convicted. Certainly I was, and many, many others, as our brother Josh Charette came to us as a Native American and spoke to us of the plight of the Native American people, their place in the church, the wrestles they have had. And I think that was an amazing conviction and wake-up call for everyone to say, okay, Lord, how have we wrestled through many of our issues and just so look past the first nation that was here that was so taken advantage of and has become invisible? That was the way Josh put it, invisible to so much of the culture, including the church. Josh was going to speak this morning. He's from Montana. They had a storm. His plane got canceled, so he's not able to be with us. But we have a group of First Nation folks from Yakima, Washington. And Chris Granberry and his wife Mary have been there for 15 years ministering. And this group on the spot has been willing to make themselves available to have a panel discussion around these issues of what it looks like to be an oppressed people, to forgive your oppressor, to move into the healing of the gospel, all the wrestles around that, whatever it is that God speaks to them that they are willing to share with us. Would you please join me in welcoming this group from Yakima, Washington?
Well, some of our folks that are here When we talked about the conference and the possibility of coming to it, one of the first questions they said, are we going to have to speak? And we said, oh, no. But we're excited to have the opportunity and to share a little bit with you guys. My name's Chris Granberry, and this is my wife, Mary, and Connie, my daughter, with us here. And then friends and really family members from our church family. And so it's kind of funny to try to introduce folks without thinking of these folks like family. As Barry said, my wife and I moved to the reservation 15 years ago almost. The goal was always to help establish a healthy church in a small town called White Swan. It's the most remote town on the reservation, and there wasn't a healthy church in that community. And so that was our goal, and by God's grace, there is a church there now, and it's growing in number and in depth of faith and love, and so we're really excited about that. So we're going to let you guys ask questions. Barry asked me to be the kind of the traffic cop because he's never seen me drive. So, no. But I'll kind of, if you ask me, I'll try to divvy the questions out to whoever I feel like might be the best one to answer. I know one of the first questions you have for me is, what am I wearing? And this is a traditional ribbon shirt. So I'm dressed the way a native man would dress to go to a feast or a funeral or a wedding or a special event of some sort. And I also have a medallion on, and there's stories behind my shirt and my medallion. Another question is, how did you guys get there in the first place? And the really short story is, I was a youth director in Birmingham, Alabama in the summer of 2000. I took a one-week team to serve in White Swan, and I thought it was going to be a really good experience for my youth, and hopefully we could do some good in the community. I was hoping to have a big impact on them, and it did. But it had an even bigger impact on me. And the short version of the story is, I was devastated. I had no idea what was happening on reservations and the situation there. I was devastated by the stories I heard and the things I saw, and also the children in the community initially stole my heart. And I've never been the same since that week in the summer of 2000. And so eventually the Lord made it clear to me and my wife that we were supposed to move there full time, and so we did in the summer of 2003. So I'm going to stop there and let our folks introduce themselves. I introduced Mary and Connie to you. I'm going to pass it over to Jade.
Sheikh Maitzki, Inknash Wuniksha Jade Tilakwat, Washnash Hair Connect Ku White Swan Connect, Kutku Inhash the Mockingbird Society Pa Ku Sacred Road Ministries, Na Itlas Iwa Tianin Mai Ku Shiapo Tumki Charlene Tilakwat. Na itlas iwa Anastia ku Shiampo Tumki and Anastasia Tilakwats. Na tutas iwa Darren Brady ku Edward Jones. Hi, good morning. My name is Jay Tilakwats. I'm from Hera and Washington. I work at Sacred Road Ministries and the Mockingbird Society. My mom's English name, there you go, is Charlene Tilakwats, and her Indian name is Tianin Mai. And my birth mom's name is Anastasia Tilakwats, and her Indian name is Anastia Tilakwats. And my birth father is Ed Jones, and my dad is Darren Brady.
Hi, my name is Tiana Tilakwats. I've been involved with Sacred Road since 2004. And I work with the Children's Ministry Department.
Hi, my name is Veronica Vasquez. I'm originally from California, went to school in Seattle, and through RUF was introduced to Sacred Road Ministries, where I've been working now 10 years.
Yeah, she's Senaba Marie Piel, and she's the Tahnin Shaw Warm Springs, Rosh Chin, Kislichinin. Hello, my name is Senaba Marie Piel. I am part Warm Springs Yakima Navajo. I was raised on a Navajo reservation where I introduced myself in Navajo first because that's my first language, first native tongue. I learned English in school. So in our native Diné traditions, we're told to introduce ourselves with our native tongue first, because that's who we are. That's our root of our tradition. So we're, in a way, connecting our spirit and voice together by introducing in our native first voice first. So I've been with Sacred Roads for about 5 years, maybe. And I'm a single mom of 5 kids. And I grew up on the Navajo Reservation and moved to Washington, and where my father's from. My mother's full Navajo. My father's Yakima and Warm Springs. So I work with Mary Granberry, and I'm a part of her staff.
Hi, my name is Mark Van Luke, and I've been with Sacred Road for just a little over a year now. And I came to Christ in a powerful way, and I kind of involved myself in various parts of the church, from the children's ministry to helping out with whatever is needed at the time. And I have, you know, 4 grandchildren that have been coming to the Sacred Road for a number of years. And let me kind of back up a little bit. I came originally from a little town called Snohomish, which is 30 miles northeast of Seattle. And I moved over to the Yakima area. My mother and my father lived over here, and my father had passed away in 96, and I wanted to be close to my mom, and so I moved over to this area. And then I got involved with an Indian and a Yakima woman, and she had one grandchild at the time, and she's 18 now. And she was a year and a half old when I first met her, you know, it's my you know, if I kind of break up, it's because they're very dear to me. And this one, she's moved to Tacoma, and she's away, and I have great concern for her right now. But we're very close. You know, she has written to me a few times that she considers more of a father figure and then a grandfather. And I'm just really humbled over the way that she treats me and gives me respect. And then the others are younger, from aging from 3 up to 11. I started making sure when I lived with the family, you know, we lived together, and I found it really hard at first because I'd never really been put in a situation like that to see how the need was, the alcohol. Since I was with her, 5 of her family members have died from alcohol. And you know, just that short period of time, and I'd never been to so many funerals in my life as until I moved over to the Yakima Nation Reservation. But I have these 4 grandchildren that have been coming for several years, and I would always make sure that they got on the bus. And, you know, I've been around church most of my life, you know, but I never grasped, you know, what it meant to be in Christ. I thought I was too far gone. I'd gotten myself involved in drugs, and I had just a lot of bitterness in my heart, you know, for, you know, the people around me. But I made sure that they got on the bus, because I wanted them to know, you know, who God was. So I would make sure every time the bus came by that that they were on there. Little did I know that through that, God spoke to my heart, you know. I come to a point in my life where me and their grandmother had been fighting a lot, and she kicked me out for a while, and I was working at my niece's house doing a real menial task, dishes, and I was somehow I clicked on this Christian music station, and I was doing dishes, and God came, and you know, I wasn't sure at first, but he said, "Aren't you tired of doing what you're doing?" You know, and I remember talking to myself saying, I guess I have been kind of doing, you know, what I've been doing. And the very next song that came on, you know, the radio, the words that they said were, "Aren't you tired of doing what you're doing?" And I knew it was God. It wasn't just that it came into my head. I knew it was God. And then all of a sudden, the power of the Spirit of God came over me, and I was driven to the floor, and I started weeping and confessing, you know, all the things that had been going on in my life. Because I had felt so worthless, dirty, and unworthy, which we all are, you know, and you know, I felt so low on myself. There was times, you know, that it would be better if I ended it all myself, you know. And the power of God was so strong. I just remember I was completely flat on my face on the floor. And when I started confessing these things, I felt the Spirit of God come and wash over me. It wasn't just an experience. I mean, it was something more than that. And when I was able to get up, I didn't immediately raise my hands, and I started praising God and thanking Him for raising me out of the despair I was in. And so I'm still involved. I mean, I broke away from the children's grandmother because we never were married. But I live like a mile and a half, 2 miles away from them. But they're very much in need of my assistance every day. You know, I try and take care of their needs because they're all women. You know, it's the grandmother, the children's mother, then all the children. And it's really a drug-infested area in which they live in. And there's a lot of people that come up to the door because still there's people that deal drugs in that area or in the household. And so I'm there all the time, you know, most of the time, just to look after and provide whatever assistance that I can give. And when the pastor spoke this morning, you know, it really touched my heart. And I've been wanting to be more effective, you know. And I realized that, you know, I needed to be broken and humbled to the point where I see, because I've been seeing, you know, at first I was real zealous, you know, and keep my mouth shut, you know, but I was noticing it wasn't being effective. I seemed to be offending more than I was being effective because I was doing it out of my own flesh, you know. And when I talked with some of the men in the church, they said, you know, we just need to pray about this. And every Thursday we have a men's prayer breakfast, and it's been really, I mean, I want to be there every Thursday, you know. And so I started praying for him, and I see little bits, you know, at a time, but I'm so anxious, you know. I want to see them come to know Christ, you know, and I know that, you know, despite where they're at, if God was able to revive me, he can revive any of them, you know. And I'm almost around my grandchildren almost every day. And to be without them, even just for this, you know, since Monday or Sunday, that was the last day I've seen them. Last night, one of my granddaughter texted me probably about 20 times, asking me, you know, everything. What are you doing? Are you on the plane still? It was beautiful, you know, they've been a real inspiration to me. And I ride the children's bus every Sunday. We ride together. And I've gotten to know a lot of the other children that we pick up on the route. You know, we've all become close, you know. I'm just very thankful that God was, you know, that he looked down on me and chased me down and brought me to a home church where I have felt welcome, have been able to be used. And seeing, normally, this is not me. I can't speak to people. Because I was always withdrawn and kind of shy, you know, but the love of Christ that's come over me, you know, I can't keep it contained any longer. The people in the household, their mother and the grandmother do notice the difference. She texts me since I've been over here. She thanked me and she says, "Mark, you deserve this." And she says, I'm real grateful with what you're doing. So I know that God is working in their lives too, even though maybe I'm a little impatient, you know. But I know he is. And so I just thank you all for bearing with me.
Hello, I'm Joshua Savadoa. I'm Hopi. I grew up in Georgia and North Carolina, and I grew up going to church all the time. My mom became a Christian when I was about 3 or 4, and she took us to church all the time, and it was kind of crazy. I tried to get out of church when I was in college, and wound up getting to RUF, and with RUF, we did a mission trip to Biloxi after Hurricane Katrina, and afterwards, I was looking online to try to go back or do a summer internship with them or something like that. I was interested in Mercy Ministry, Word and Deed Ministry, and on the M&A website, I saw Sacred Road and thought, oh, that's interesting because they're working with Native people, and I followed them for a few years and then went out as an intern in 2009. Then in 2010, I joined staff and have been the children's director for the past 8 years, and that's me. So.
One thing I'll mention too is that Joshua on the end there, he's right on the verge of getting ordained. So I think he's going to be. I think he'll be the second Native American ordained in the PCA soon. So. Yeah. Well, from my wife, okay. What do you want to hear from her?
Do you want, you have a specific question? So, it's changing now. And when we arrived on the reservation in 2003, we moved with 4 children. And Connie is now our 5th. And so at that time, our kids were aged from age 10 to 5. We now have one living in Georgia who's married and three in the Covenant College area, two still in school there. And so my perspective on my life is changing a lot right now. For so many years, we were living and working in a community as newcomers. We were like the preschoolers. We were learning all the new rules. I would get slapped on the hand and then taught how to do it again. And, oh, now you got it right. And just learning all the a new set of rules from a new community. And I was learning the same way the kids in the community learn, with the same amount of strictness, the same amount of love. And now my role is one of teaching those cross-cultural rules. And so we have a church plant now, and I still have strong relationships with women living in the traditional community. And so I have some young women working with me and Seneba working with me. And we have a lot going on at our church, including helping facilitate Christian aspects to funerals in the community, which is a whole new dimension to the ministry. But yet we still are called on to help with traditional funerals or feasts or food gatherings or different things going on in the community. So the partnership continues to grow. But the questions from the community, they kind of reveal that there is a greater understanding of who Jesus is and what my walk with Jesus has meant and what that picture looks like. And then for me, moving on in these roles, feeling a little bit older and having a little more freedom for the Lord to show me where to invest most of my time, that's in transition. But I spend most of my time in the White Swan area with probably half of my week is working with folks that are learning to minister in Native America, and probably half my time is working with the community itself, visiting folks in hospitals or at their homes, working at the Longhouse is the place of traditional worship. I'm there pretty often. So my time is equally split, if that gives you an idea.
All right. Are there any other questions for anybody up here, or if you want to ask me and have me pick somebody to answer your question? Yes.
I have a question probably also. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. The question is, how do you handle the loneliness and the isolation of being Native American in the PCA?
So my name is Chantel Quatz, and I'm 22 years old. I've been a Christian since I was about 9 years old. That's when I met my mom and my dad. Not my mom and my dad, but my mom and my dad. And for me, being a 22-year-old and being a Native American Christian is basically unheard of on the reservation. But there's this awesome, cool organization called Young Life that has a good network of, they're not necessarily Natives, but they're Christians that are 22 years old and they're Christians that are 18. And it's just, it's helped me a lot because they know what it's like to, like, be 22 years old and not, and having to, like, minister to, like, younger children and, like, trying to figure out how, like, certain things work and all that. But it gets a little lonely, but I also do have my little sister here who's just, like, just as awesome, and she's pretty great. And we, like, bounce ideas off of each other. So, like, when we have questions, because, like, okay, this is not really scary, kind of weird. But so, like, when I die, like, I want to have a Native funeral, but I'm Christian, but I'm Native American as well. So, like, we bounce ideas off of that. But, yeah, but Young Life gave me a good community, and also I have like my family right here. Like it's pretty good. They're pretty awesome as well. So, yeah. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
One of the ways that, as a family, we had fellowship as we were raising our kids on the reservation was that we did host short-term teams from the beginning. And we started with the short-term teams, we offer an internship. So we would have college-age believers living with us all summer. And so those became a lot of the role models for the young people in the community as well as our own children. And I remember Felicia is in Bible college now. She's your age, 1 year older than Jade. And I remember one time, once we had a church plant, I think she heard somebody say, well, maybe we don't need short-term teams anymore. And she freaked out. She said, what do you mean we don't need the teams? Because our community has gotten used to the PCA, the Body of Christ, coming to us. And so the loneliness has been, you know, greatly lessened because the Body of Christ has really done a great job coming alongside of us as a church.
Yeah, that what Mary just shared reminds me of something that, again, people used to ask us regularly, you know, has the community accepted you? Are you rejected? Are you part of the community, not part of the community, et cetera? And in some ways, to some folks, we are still considered the original terrorists. So some folks would still think of us as Taliban or Al-Qaeda. Other folks think of us as family. One family in particular has given me an Indian name, which means you're adopted, basically. So some folks think of us as family. Some folks think of us as the worst kind of enemy there is. Some folks would even want me dead, probably. But as a whole, the community has really embraced us and is very interested in learning more about Jesus and want to know what this is all about. And there's a high level of interest and many people drawing near. So it's been amazing how the community at large has responded to us and to our church and to the gospel. But also it's been amazing how the church has responded to the opportunity to love our first neighbors well. And so that's been really encouraging to us. You always hear about the 80-20 rule. Well, we get the 20. Like, we get the best. Like, it's just like the kind of the cream of the crop, you know, of all ages, believers who want to come and love and serve. And that does help, like Mary was saying, with the loneliness. So, yes.
And, of course, on the reservation, the addiction rate, the suicide rate, the poverty rate is astronomical. Mm-hmm. But up there, we see that as a direct result of the white Christian oppressor. Mm-hmm. And so when many of the native people come to faith or convert, mm-hmm. they're seen as traitors and kind of ostracized. Do you find that on the reservation?
You want to just nod or shake your head? What do you? Oh, you can't. I'm sorry. Yeah. He's saying that he's worked with the Cree in Canada, and quite often if somebody converts to Christianity, they're seen as a traitor who has embraced the white man's way, as Native people would say, and, you know, is a traitor to their culture and their people, and their ancestors. And so then they are mistreated and ostracized. Have you guys, what would you say to that? Yes or no? Or somewhere in the middle? Not too bad. Jade's saying not too bad. Connie's saying, yeah, pretty much. Veronica's seen it. Cinnabon's saying yes. So I think there's a good bit of that for sure where we are. It's in the traditional culture, 50-50, Cinnabon says. Mark says, yeah, 50-50. Yeah, it happens. I think Yakima people one of the cultural values is to be a little more open-minded about religion, and they want everybody to be religious, but they want everybody to kind of choose their own way. That's what they say anyway, right? What do you think?
That's kind of difficult because there's a majority of Native Americans who try to obey by traditional law, by their traditional ways. They were taught and told how to be and how to pray, the traditional rules. Being Christian and learning about the gospel, I've learned about the gospel all my life. My grandmother was very open to where she made me aware to, you know, go to revivals. She's never told me, okay, you're going to be this, you're going to believe in this, and this is it. She's always made sure that I knew and had respect and open mind for everything. So in that way, I guess it kind of depends on how you're raised. But most households, children don't have a parent to teach them that. They don't. Most homes are where the children are raised by their grandmother or a disabled grandfather, or some of them are in single parent homes where the parents working and the children, like the oldest teenagers, watching the younger kids or something like that. So it's really the traditional side. I've learned the Yakima Nation side, where I learned about the values of being in a longhouse and learning what the rules are for a Native lady to gather food, to gather berries, to dig for roots, to learn how to cut up elk that is brought in by men hunters. Men are raised to be hunters, to go out there and bring the elk and bring the fish in. And we're taught how to clean it, how to cut it, and how to, you know, prepare and save for food, for feast, for ceremonies, and things like that. So as the traditional side, we're taught to value how to survive, you know, if how to live off of what we're given. And in that way, for them, creator is Tamanathla. He's creator. So it runs parallel with what I've learned with the church, where I've been for 4 years, and I've been about 5 years now, and I was baptized by Chris, and he's my brother. You know, he was given an Indian name. He's Momo. When he was given that Indian name, and he stood on that wash in the longhouse, and Wendell Hannigan gave him that Indian name, you know, from that moment, he wasn't the white Christian priest. You know, that was my brother. He's my brother. So if anybody questioned anything or said anything and I felt was disrespectful, you know, it was me, my heart. I'm like, no, that's my brother. You don't talk about him like that. So, like, Native Americans, I still in the community get questioned, why are you there? You learned the longhouse way. You learned you were initiated. Your children were taught to be gatherers, to be these Native, like, to work in a longhouse. Why are you at that church? Why are you doing that? Because that's where my heart is. You know, my heart is to serve and to help Mary and to be in our church building. And I was with them when it was first at the longhouse, and then when they moved into the new building, and we're wonderfully blessed with our church building now, and where our church now has a home. And now the majority of our church members on Sunday are children, our babies, our little kids. And when we had Presbytery at our church building this past couple months, that is the first time ever I had seen that many adult men in our building, ever. We've had like over like, how many, 50 Presbytery leaders and men there. And I was like, I was like, this isn't normal. What's going on? There was like all these men. Mike Higgins was there. And so Chris was like, I'm going to ask a community member to come up and speak. Would you, any volunteers? And everybody was like, no. And I was like, I guess I can talk. And I went up there and gave my spiel. You know, I was, you know, how I came to know Chris, and which was that I was a single mom, and I was living in a home where my mother-in-law, we basically, all five of my children were in one bedroom, and we had one bathroom, one bedroom. The rest of the house was pretty much storage. We had no place to cook. If I wanted to cook, I had to go next door to cook, and I had to cook for like 15 people. You know, everything that I bought and came into the home, I had to prepare for everybody. So when I at that point, I came down, and I was like, okay, Lord, you want me to believe in you. You want me to believe there's a God. You want me to believe that God can do anything. And I cried. I cried out to the Lord. I got on my hands and knees and I cried. I said, Lord, if you are a good Lord and if you are the best Lord that can provide and can help me, my children, get me out of here. Get me out of this. You get me out of this. You get me into a home that I need, that's safe for me and my children. I will follow you. I will do anything for you. I will be the woman you want me to be. You get me out of here. Get my kids out of here. And I will do anything. I will pray to you every day, Lord. Get me out of here. And I was crying and weeping, crying. And like not even a day later, the next day, I got a call from Yaqua Nation Housing. Miss Piel, you are the first five family, the third family out of the first five. You're getting a house. We have a two-story house for you. Would you like your keys? Come, you need to come to the office. I'm like, yes, I want my house. So I got in my van, threw my kids in the van, let's go. And we went to the housing and signed the paper. Here's your keys. Okay. And they're like, we're taking you to your house. Went over there, and there's this huge two-story house. It looks like out of a Hallmark magazine. I'm sitting there looking at it like, what in the world? And went in there, opened my door, walked in. There was a brand new house, two-story house. With three bedrooms, with washer, dryer, refrigerator, everything. And I'm like, this is you, Lord. You did it. I asked, and you did it. I was like, okay, all right, this is what I need to do. So me and my children threw all our stuff in trash bags, everything in trash bags. And I had one couch, one bed. That's all I had. And the clothes that we were carrying. We threw it in, went in there. Next day, we were moving into our house. And nobody knew we were in that house. And I hear a doorbell ring at the door. I was like, what the heck? Nobody knows I'm here. Who's looking for me? And I go to the door, and I open it, and there's this white guy standing there with his daughter, teenage daughter. I'm like, who are you? Hi, I'm Chris Granberry. We got a call, and my wife filled up my truck, and we have some dishes and food, and we have some stuff for you. I heard you need help, and I have a truck full of stuff, and I'm like, are you kidding me? I was like, who are you? And he goes like, I'm with Sacred Road. And I didn't know. I didn't know who he was. And I'm like, Lord, did you send him to me? And I couldn't believe it. It's never happened. I'm one that, you know, you provide for yourself. You do everything for yourself. And you have to survive yourself. Nobody gives you anything. So this is like a vice versa of experience where, okay, the Lord was providing for me. And I never knew what that felt like. I never knew what that was. And so from that day, my children and I have, that's my brother, and that's my sister Mary, and that's my family. And so in the community we're in, we get backlash even just being, believers and associated with our church. We get told things, but my children, they go to youth group every Tuesday. They started D group. My daughters, all my children were baptized by Chris. We're all baptized together. And I guess the cross-cultural, we're trying to still find a mix, but it's very brand new for the community members to want to come to our church and want us to help them with funerals that come up or hard things like that, and that's never been done. So with our church, it's like they're trusting Chris more now than ever. Like, okay, you're really going to stay. You're really going to be here. You really have my back, because that trust was never there until now. And I believe that with him sticking it out and Mary sticking it out and choosing to stay there and live there and be there. I know how hard it is with their family being so far away, and yet their roots are there, and that's their home. So I hope that answers your question.
Okay, yeah, let's just thank these guys for being willing to be very brave and come up here and share with us. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to just take 2 minutes to pray, walking together for the long haul. And those of you who are just beginning to enter into some of this, and those of you who have been at it for a couple of years, and you're saying, this is an entire life of commitment to love. And our culture, every element of it, needs that stability of that persevering love of God being present in the community. And that's part of what God is calling you to and going to give you the grace for. So what I'd like to do is just around the tables, one or two persons, just lead in prayer for that persevering power of the Holy Spirit in whatever ministry you all are engaged in.